Hello, good morning everyone. Welcome back. So, first thing to cover quickly is I had a message off my sister Sophie yesterday. She sends me this message about every 6 to 8 months, I'd say, saying, should I do this plan by X trainer or should I do this? Should I do that? And my answer's always been the same. Track your calories, get your deficit, your protein, get your steps in, and do some work that you like. So, she has been doing that. And she's lost 8 pounds, but she's still looking for more. Okay, very common between people. You're still looking for more, you want things quicker. You think someone's plan will have something secret in it. You think your local PT will have some secret sauce that nobody's ever thought about that might be the thing that triggers phenomenal change, as opposed to patience and time. You, remember I mentioned in the podcast last week that quote, you plus patience plus time. That's nothing beats those things. So we all want to get places quicker. We all want to climb the corporate ladder or make more money or get leaner or get stronger or rush into like, even relationships. All this, everyone wants to do it faster now, quick, let's go. But very rarely does that work out for us in the long term. And I mentioned a study on this that the lower calorie diet group versus the moderate calorie deficit group, right? You think they'd lose more fat. They claimed they were eating less calories, but they didn't lose more fat over the study. They actually lost less fat than the moderate group. And the reason for this isn't some magical thing. It's just that they didn't actually stick to the calories they were given because it was too low. So not only did they eat more than their targets, they actually exceeded the other group's calorie intake by quite a margin. So watch out for your mind playing these games on you. You want quicker weight loss. You want it to happen quicker for a certain event. And it's got to be realistic, right? If you've got to drop a few pounds in a month or two, it's fine. But if you're saying I want to lose, 20 pounds in 6 weeks, you're like, oof, that's very, that's pushing it. So a message to Sophie for the thousandth time in her life. Stick to the basics. There is no secret. Time and patience. They're very simple concepts. You must follow these concepts, really, if you want to be pulled away from this like hellhole of desire, always back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Waking up in the night thinking about this, doing that, contemplating this, contemplating that, wasting so much time when all you've got to do is focus on the basics every day and over time it happens. Come on, what are we doing? Anyway. One more thing to cover before I get into the topic today. Also, there's people in the group as well saying, I've tracked, but on and off. I know I can be better and stuff like that. The thing to remember about tracking is that you don't have to be perfect with tracking. Far from it, actually, to get results. Consistency doesn't mean every single day. It doesn't mean that for me. Consistency is just like, and your resilience, kind of like, you have one or two, or even 3 days in the bounce, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you've got parties, blah, blah, blah. Hey, you've consumed too much energy. Now, when this happens, you don't see this as a negative, right? You see this as a positive that your body has been given the energy it needs to really perform in the next few days. So on Friday, Saturday, Sunday for me, I went to my friend Gio's house for his birthday. Me, my friend Gio, and Jack, right? He wanted to have Indian takeaway Friday. We did. Not going to say no to it. He ordered it in. We went out for food. We went for brunch. He had things made, by his family, whatever. So, when I don't say no to these things, and when I look at my calorie intake, 4,000 calorie days easily, some of them just 4,000, 4,005. And I woke up yesterday, like 4 kgs heavier than I was a week ago. Now, that's not all fat, obviously not. But instead of seeing this as a negative, I realized quickly how full I felt. My muscles were full. I felt really like, wow, I'm quite stuffy, quite strong. Like, I've given my body a lot of energy and nutrients that it needs, right? So when I trained yesterday, did the workout in the morning and jiu-jitsu, I felt great. I felt strong. I felt like it was a good workout. I felt like I had the energy. And that's how you need to see these things, guys. If you like end up consuming more energy than you need, you better put that to work. Your body's now, your muscle glycogen is likely topped up, which means you can put more work through the muscle. You can go and utilize it as opposed to sitting on it, being like, oh, why did I do that? Well, okay, you've done it. You're going to feel good doing the workout. You might even do your best workout because your strength and stuff will be in a good place. So that's how to see it. Anyway, I want to cover this podcast on protein actually, because a lot of people ask about protein. They've never eaten more protein, calories, protein. They're like, why, for one? Why should I care about it? What is it about protein, all this stuff? So I'm going to just take things from the book Alan Aragon has done on the research on all this stuff, and I'm just going to read that out to you because it's important and it's very like succinct as well. So this is going to be the everything you need to know about protein. Some of it might bore you, but it's important to know, right? So protein was first like discovered, if you would call it that. It's always been there, but discovered by a Dutch chemist in 1838. And he based it on the Greek word proteus, which means first rank or first importance. Because protein's necessity for sustaining life, as well as the multitude of crucial roles protein plays in the body, that's why he named it. So all cellular processes involve protein in some way. Protein functions as structural components, enzymes, hormones, immune factors, transporters, acid-base regulators, and neurotransmitters. The single largest tissue store of bodily protein is our skeletal muscle. The importance of maintaining the health and functionality of muscle tissue cannot be overstated, like I've mentioned many times as well. Protein is known to most of the readers of this book as one of the macronutrients, with the other two being carbohydrate and fat. Macronutrients have also been called energy nutrients since they provide calories. 4 calories a gram for carbs and protein, 9 calories a gram for fat, to fuel the myriad of bodily processes. There's controversy over whether alcohol can rightly be classified as a macronutrient, but it technically does provide energy at 7 calories per gram. Protein is considered an essential nutrient because the body cannot biosynthesize enough of it to maintain health and survival. Protein therefore must be obtained from the diet. Proteins are large molecules consisting of amino acids. Of the 20 amino acids that comprise protein, 9 are considered essential amino acids, EAAs, and thus must be obtained from food. A perpetual narrative in dietetics curriculums is that the general population overconsumes protein to a degree that's detrimental to health. This claim is unfounded and the concern is overblown. The latest National Health and Nutrition Examination survey data shows the protein intake of US adults averages 88 grams per day, which amounts to 14 to 16% of total calories. This is within the Institute of Medicine's acceptable macronutrient distribution range of 10 to 35% of total daily calories. Furthermore, the intake of 1.1 gram per kilogram is not excessive by any scientifically sound standard. In fact, it's suboptimal for older and dieting populations who are physically active. Okay. Regarding concerns for kidney health, a recent 28-study meta-analysis compared high protein intakes, 1.5 grams per kilogram of body weight, or 20% energy intake, or 100 grams of protein per day, with normal to low protein intakes of 5% less energy intake from protein per day. Okay. It was concluded that higher protein intakes have a trivial to non-existent effect on kidney function. Furthermore, a series of studies by Antonio and colleagues with protein intakes ranging from 2.5 to 3.4 kgs and trial durations ranging from 2 to 6 months found no adverse effects on kidney function or any other health parameter. In addition, a high protein intake averaging 2.8 grams per kilogram over a 6 month period in trained women had no harmful effects on bone mineral content or density. Okay? In other words, the average American's protein intake is far from problematically high. If anything, it may be too low. So here's the hierarchy of protein, okay? So you've got to consume protein, you've got your protein target. What's more important? Is the total amount? Is the distribution throughout the day? Is it the timing? Okay, so here's it in ranking of importance. So you want to focus on the first ones I say first, and obviously going down, you can start tweaking. The first thing is total daily protein amount. This is the most influential factor for all goals as far as protein is concerned. Although it's theoretically possible to get total daily intake right, but lack quality to a critical degree, it's somewhat far-fetched. Harvin, Larrain, and colleagues saw no significant differences in muscular size and strength gains between vegans and omnivores, and this presumably was due to the sufficient total protein daily intake of 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. I'd still reiterate that the use of untrained subjects leaves open questions. Nevertheless, in the big picture, total daily intake is the weightiest factor. Once you've got that covered, you might want to move on to step two. Distribution of protein through the day. This refers to the spread or pattern of intake, so dosing, spacing, and positioning of protein over the course of the day. For example, there's ongoing research comparing the impact of evenly spread versus skewed feeding patterns, higher versus lower feeding frequencies, and broad versus time-restricted feeding windows. While all of these are potentially important lines of inquiry, they take a distant backseat to total daily protein intake. Third factor, timing of protein relative to the training bout. This factor has to have the least impact, especially in programs with typical multiple protein feedings per day amounting to an adequate total. A case can be made for the utility of specific timing of protein in cases of exceptionally low meal frequency, 1 or 2 meals a day. In that case, the positioning timing of protein can potentially influence training performance or muscle growth, but even then, it's rare that individuals consuming 1 or 2 meals a day have pressing concerns of optimizing either of these goals. Okay, so it doesn't matter much. Okay. In contrast to protein and fat, strategic timing of carbohydrates can be a critical factor for endurance-orientated exercise performance. So when it comes to protein and fats, you know, when you look into these and if you're tracking fats as well, it doesn't matter throughout the day. But carbs, you know, you've got to be timing them before your workouts, during the workout, especially if you're doing endurance. But again, most of us are not doing like endurance-based sports, like 90 minutes plus per session. Some of you are, so you need to look into it, but a lot of you don't have to worry too much about it. So the general population without specific athletic or body composition orientated goals, aside from general health, should consume protein at the minimal range of 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram per day. This is 50 to 100% greater than the RDA. And if you're using our apps, you'd definitely be in this range. Okay, so that's good. It's important to realize that the RDA was derived from studies on sedentary individuals using nitrogen balance, which is a crude and archaic method of estimating changes in muscle protein status. Therefore, the RDA, now over 40 years out of date, does not apply to the physically active and or dieting. So that means if you're trying to lose weight populations or the elderly. Okay, so basically, don't even, you know, just ignore the RDA basically. A few more things then, maybe it's important. So to maximize muscle growth can be achieved with 1.6 to 2.2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So it's not as much as you think when you look at some PTs and stuff who recommend protein intakes, but it's still a bit higher than, you know, you would be eating without tracking. So 1.6 grams per kilogram, for me, that's around, I think, 135 grams of protein a day. And look, when I was 16 to 20 and I weighed less, I was 250 grams a day. You know, and I was, you know, make sure to try and do that. But really, I didn't need to push it that much because the diminishing returns. So I could have made it less stressful for myself, you know. So we don't need to go super high, but we need to get it right. Let's have a look at a few more things, maybe this is important. So high quality proteins are characterized by high digestibility and high proportions of EAAs. Protein quality ranking systems include the Protein Digestibility Corrected Amino Acid Score and its successor, the Digestible Indispensable Amino Acid Score. Yes. Animal-derived proteins, so meat, fish, poultry, eggs, and dairy, tend to be higher quality than plant-derived proteins. Animal proteins have shown greater anabolic responses in head-to-head comparisons examining muscle protein synthesis. Animal proteins generally have higher EAA and branched-chain amino acids. Among the BCAAs, leucine acts as an anabolic signaling molecule and plays a key role in stimulating muscle protein synthesis and suppressing muscle protein breakdown. But overall, it doesn't really matter. It's total that matters. So let me explain this bit now. Of the 9 studies in the meta-analysis, 3 favored dairy protein and 6 showed no significant advantage of either protein type. None of the studies found soy to be superior performer, either animal protein one or it was a wash. Only 2 of the studies involved optimal total protein intakes or above 1.6 grams per kilogram. Only 1 of the 9 studies involved resistance-trained subjects. A more recent larger meta-analysis by Lim and colleagues concluded that younger adults, 50 years or less, had greater absolute and proportional lean mass gains with animal versus plant protein supplementation. Still, this meta-analysis suffered many of the same limitations as Messina's meta-analysis. So he goes on to say, basically, just focus on total protein. If you then want to look at protein quality, you can, but overall, total quality first, right? So let's have a look here. He does suggest if you do want to optimize it, that you consume 15% more protein if it's plant-based than animal-based. So say, for example, now 1.6 gram per kilogram, someone weighing 80 kgs, that's 128 grams of protein a day. But if you were completely plant-based, you would try and go for 147 grams a day. This is for like optimization again. It's not really required for all of us listening. Okay, so the main sex-based difference relevant to setting protein intake targets is the higher proportion of body fat in women. Since women have a lower proportion of lean mass, total body weight based protein recommendations can potentially be skewed towards overestimating women's needs. However, this dilemma can be solved relatively simply by starting at the lower end of the optimal range of 1.6 gram per kilogram. The amount of times I've said this, 1.6 grams, is too added. Men and women can use 1.6 gram of kilogram as a baseline from which to adjust upward. It's reasonable to assume that women require less protein per unit of total body mass since they tend to carry a higher proportion of body fat than men. Okay, so again, don't have to worry about going too much or matching men. A lot of advice out there is based for men, right? So it's important to realize that. So yeah, and that's really. Yeah, so fasting is not your friend if your main goal is muscle growth. And I would say a lot of us should be focusing on muscle growth or muscle retention. So I had a question yesterday about fasting. It's like, unless I just don't see the benefit of it personally. Like, obviously some people doing it religious purposes. I'm not saying, you know, that's fine. Like, but why would you fast if, one, it's not optimal for muscle growth? Two, it's not really optimal for your day to day. I mean, let's be honest, like if you're fasting, you're going to be thinking about food a lot more than someone who isn't. And some people say, yeah, but after day two, you know, you feel fine. It's like, yeah, but on the day you're fasting, you're probably thinking, oh, I'm starving, this and that, smell of food. Everything's heightened, right? Because you were abstaining from everything. So all you're thinking about is food. It's just no need to go into it. There's some research potentially to say maybe it's better for gut. I don't know. There's not much evidence on this type of stuff. It's all speculation right now. There's no good, you know, if you're thinking of what your body requirements, your energy requirements per day, your training, you want to make sure your muscles recover. You want to be giving your body what it needs. Okay, you want to be make sure you're getting your protein in. You're not leaving it days without protein. You're not letting your body break into muscle tissue. Like, that's not good. Right, it's not good at all. And he mentions it a bit here. So here's a little quote he's got. So thus, based on the acute research to date, we argue that the lost opportunity for amino acid induced muscle protein synthesis with more feedings may not be compensated for, which fewer feedings at higher doses, at which is likely to occur with intermittent fasting. It is our position that intermittent fasting likely represents a suboptimal dietary approach to remodel skeletal muscle, which could impact the ability to maintain or enhance muscle mass and quality, especially during periods of reduced energy availability. Basically, in plain English, if you're going to be doing intermittent fasting and you're trying to lose weight at the same time, you're making it harder to hold on to your muscle mass, and you lose that muscle mass, it's a lot harder to gain it back. For example, it takes, I think, 2,800 calories to build 1 pound of muscle and 700 calories to lose it. So what that just means, it's way more expensive to build it and it's much easier to lose it. So if you need 700 calories of energy, it'll take the muscle, it'll break a pound of muscle down. And if you were to build muscle, it takes 2,800 calories of energy. So it's way too expensive to want to throw away. Good God. Like, if you look at a lot of studies on people getting older and metabolic health and stuff, muscle is one of the main things behind how your quality of life as you age. You lose muscle, you lose function. You lose function, you lose lifestyle. You lose lifestyle, you lose motivation. All this stuff, you're always hand in hand. You keep your muscle mass, you make it strong and active over your years. You'll be feeling, when you're 60, you'll still feel 40. When you're 70, you might still feel 50. Do you know what I mean? That's the difference it makes. So please take this seriously. I hope this was a good overview of protein. It might be boring, but I have a questions about it. And that's really just as succinct as you can get on, like, the vast research in protein was about. So apologies if it was a bit bland on the information, but please come back to this episode about protein. Listen to it a few times if I were you. So, yeah, have a good day. Speak to you soon.